Welcome, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm so excited to welcome everyone to this session of the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting, which is also hosting the annually held 13th Richard Hettinger Award today on Monday, December 2nd, 2024. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded, and the meeting audio will be placed on our website. Just want to share a few helpful tips for people who are joining on phone calls. You can press star six to mute or unmute yourself. And if you would like to make comments, you can raise your virtual hands and lower your virtual hands by pressing star nine. I just want to state that because this is a special session of our AAC meeting, we are going to hold the annual Hettinger Award ceremony, virtual ceremony, in the beginning of the meeting, and afterwards, from approximately 6:05, we will go back to the usual business of the AAC meetings, and we will go through more helpful tips for that are relevant to the meeting at that point, and. I just want to ask Chair Sheehan to go through the motion of going through the review and approval of today's meeting agenda. And I would quickly read it out loud. We, as I stated, that the Hettinger Award will be the first in the during the first part of this meeting. Afterwards, we will go through the roll call of the committee members, review of prior meeting minutes, board report, and then we have the presentation for fiscal year 26 service and fairs. We have presenters for that. We will go through public comments, hear from the bus and rail subcommittee about their report, as well as the metro access subcommittee report, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 7:30. Chair Sheehan, if you just want to go through the motion and get the approvals for the agenda, and then we can continue to the award ceremony.
Great, I will do that. Do I hear a motion to accept the agenda as presented?
So moved.
Paul Semelfort.
A second?
I second the Sandy Newsell.
Thank you very much. Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the agenda is approved.
Excellent. So now, I just want to say that because this is such a special session that we are holding today. I would like to state that this is the Hettinger Award, 13th Hettinger Award that we are holding today. And we have some speakers with us who will be making remarks, and I would like to invite them. So please bear with me as I go through the program and invite, excuse me, Mr. Millis to make some opening remarks. Glenn Millis is the Senior Policy and Planning Officer from Access Services from Metro. Mr. Millis?
Thank you, Anu. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 13th Annual Hettinger Award to be presented to Carol Pareto Lopez. By way of introduction to tonight's event, I am going to speak briefly about the Richard Hettinger Award itself. A lot will be said about Carol. I will leave that to others. But who was Richard Hettinger? Richard was the father of accessibility at Metro. He left an enduring legacy, not only at Metro, but not many folks know he left a legacy that rippled from DC to across the country. You see, Metro was designed in the 60s without elevators, inaccessible from the very beginning, just like legacy systems in New York City, Philadelphia, Boston, and Chicago, all which were built without elevators. Richard, who at age 16 contracted polio, which caused him to use a wheelchair, at the age of 36 thought that wrong, and he fought a Metro without elevators. In 1973, Richard brought a lawsuit backed by the Paralyzed Veterans of America and other associations under the 68th Architectural Barriers Act. And I think it's important to keep in mind this was all before the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990. Well, Richard won, federal judge agreed with it. And in doing so, it set Metro on its path to becoming the first accessible major transit system in America with elevators in every station. You know, the precedent was seen at new systems being built across the country, systems like BART in San Francisco and Miami, Atlanta, and Baltimore, who all followed in those footsteps. So Richard set a standard for accessibility, not only in Washington, but helped push accessibility across the country. That's a big deal. Richard also chaired Metro's first Disability Advisory Committee, began a long and continuing conversation between the community and Metro that continues today with today's Accessibility Advisory Committee. And today, Metro fully understands that accessibility benefits not only people with disabilities, but all our customers. So the Richard Hettinger Award is named after a truly exemplary person and is given to exemplary individuals who also move accessibility forward. As I said, a lot will be said about Carol tonight. So all I will say is, Carol, you truly earned this award. Congratulations, Carol. Our first speaker is Dr. Jason Snyder, the Vice President of System-Wide Accessibility at Metro. Mr. Snyder, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. It's my great pleasure to welcome you all to the 2024 Richard W. Hettinger Award Ceremony. We're thrilled to have our esteemed guests and Accessibility Advisory Committee members with us tonight. First and foremost, I would like to extend my heartfelt gratitude to the AAC and Metro team members for making this event possible. Your continued dedication to our region's accessibility needs is appreciated as we strive to be the change we want to see both within Metro and across the region. As we gather here tonight, let us take a moment to reflect on the incredible achievements of our special guest, Carol Pereiro Lopez, who has demonstrated exceptional dedication, innovation, and resilience as an advocate and champion for accessibility. Her contributions remind us that success is not just about reaching important milestones towards equitable access for all, but also about the journey and impact one creates along the way. Tonight, we will celebrate an outstanding individual who inspires us all to strive for something greater than ourselves, leaving lasting impressions and relationships that continue to support the vital work of the AAC, Metro, and the community in which we all serve. Without further ado, let's continue our evening in honoring our 13th annual Richard W. Hettinger Award recipient. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Really well said. Now I would ask Christian Blake to make the special remarks. Mr. Blake is the Vice President of Access Services from Metro, and he really needs no introduction. So Mr. Blake, please go ahead.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome again to another edition of our Richard Hettinger Award Ceremony. Unfortunately, again, we don't have any cake and other treats for you, but still a great time. And this is really a special one for me. I mean, all of you have been special. I don't want to start that. But I have to tell you, you know, using a sports analogy, usually after you retire from a sporting league like hockey or baseball or football, you have to wait 5 years before you're inducted into the Hall of Fame. But there are some people who are just so great, who transcend their sport, their profession, like Wayne Gretzky did in hockey. The minute he retired, they moved and put him in the Hall of Fame and retired his number across all the league. To go even further back, we talk about Jackie Robinson, wore number 42. No one else in Major League Baseball can wear that number. I haven't been all around the world. I've been around a bit. But I must say that Carol Lopez is the most knowledgeable person I ever met when it comes to the Americans with Disabilities Act. And I've said that more than once. This is not my first time saying it, but it's the truth. I met some great people who taught me and reeled me in my initial days at the Maryland Transit Administration, the late George Leonard and Ms. Leslie Salgado. They really introduced me to the ADA and brought me the sensitivity I needed when I was just trying to be a political mover and shaker, moving bus stops here and there, making people quote unquote happy. And they taught me a lot. But I got here at WMATA and I learned from the best. And when you can say to someone who I probably have relied on Carol Lopez more in my professional life than anybody else. And I've worked for governors, I've worked for senators, I've worked for GMs of transit, but I never had, I mean, she was my AI before AI became a thing. When you can count on somebody and just trust and know. And that was Carol Lopez. I think I also said one meeting, we were having a team meeting. If they took Carol Lopez away from me, I wouldn't be here. And that's what I said back then. But you know, it was so funny. A few years ago, they did take her from me, and I'm happy for Carol. And Carol is going on to do some other great things in accessibility for one of our transit colleagues, and that's Amtrak. And she's doing some great, wonderful things to have her impact all across this country. But I just want to say I'm honored to have worked with Carol. And a lot of times I can say I was really working for Carol because I learned to understand what Carol said is what goes. There was no way for me to step in and try to overrule the GOAT. And she was my personal GOAT when it comes to accessibility. Carol, I just appreciate you. I thank you for everything. And this is a well-deserved award you're getting tonight. And I just want to congratulate you and just say keep up the great work all across this country that you're doing.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Blake. And yes, we can all just continue with our sentiments. Chair Sheehan.
Well, I hate to follow Mr. Blake in remarks like that, but Carol, I agree with a lot of what Mr. Blake has said. It has been such an honor to work with you. One of the things that we, and at least and I as chair, always could rely on is your steady input as far as ADA was concerned. Whether we were working on signage, which I know I relied on you quite a bit for, or the 7,000 or 8,000 rail car series, which we all worked on together. You were always there to give us advice on what the ADA required, how it could be implemented, what a better way of moving forward would be. Working with the engineers inside of WMATA and your fine staff, and then also negotiating with the advisory committee. You gave us the information that we needed to help implement a very, very accessible system. You did it with grace. You did it with poise. We had the right information. I can't ever remember any of your information that you gave us being refuted or turned back or changed or whatever. And it was such a joy always to work with you. You were always there for us. You let us make decisions on our own as best we could, and when we were going in a direction that wasn't quite right, you would guide us gently back into the correct directions. And so, without your ability to keep us on that right track, who knows where we would have been as far as accessibility with WMATA? You helped the committee, but you also helped the disability community in general. Whether they were visually impaired or paralyzed veterans or paralyzed folks in wheelchairs, whatever the disability was, you always had the answers that we needed to move forward in a smart, sensible way. I know it's a loss for WMATA that you've moved on. I was not surprised to hear that you've moved on and kept in the area of accessibility through your retirement. So congratulations, Carol. You deserve it. And we just wish you the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you, Chair Sheehan, and I must share this that this nomination was not just by one individual, and obviously this should not be any. This should not come as a surprise to anyone because so many members of the AAC nominated Carol. So, Now I would ask Dr. Posner to make his comments. He, as you all know, but just to state that he is the immediate past chair of the AAC. So Dr. Posner, please go.
Oh, thank you. Well, Carol was a highlight of my career on the AAC because I was allowed to come in and stop by her office and discuss things, not only about WMATA, but about Paralyzed Veterans of America, about elevator designs, about signage, about automated vehicles, and found out that her knowledge was so broad and sweeping. She knew more than what was going on at WMATA because she studied. She knew all of this stuff. When I went to a National Academy meeting and came back and chatted with her, she already knew all of that material because she had worked with the people that wrote the papers. And so it was truly wonderful. But one question I would ask is when I take Amtrak from Washington, D.C. up to Philadelphia, and I get off at 23rd Street Station in Philadelphia, if I have my Amtrak ticket, I can ride their local transit for free. Wouldn't it be nice if you could negotiate with WMATA so that if someone came into Union Station with an Amtrak ticket, they'd get their first ride for free going into town and also a free ride back to Union Station. That would be a real treat working with your former colleagues. But I love it. And I love that you're so happy at what you're doing, and the kids are happy, and your husband is happy. And enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. And let everybody else pat you on the back and give you a hug. Here's a virtual.
Thank you.
Thank you for all you've done for me personally, as well as for everybody else.
I'm taking notes to take to as well. Thank you. Thank you for the tips and recommendations.
Just like Carol did all the years that she was here, taking notes. Now I am going to ask Tino Calabria. He is the chair of the Bus and Rail Subcommittee to say a few words. Tino?
Yes, actually, I left where I was this morning at 5:30 a.m. to c catch a plane here, and in Santa Monica, it was seven.
It's really, oh no.
Hello. But I had to be here, even though it's only in the 20s here. I had to be here because although I've worked with architects in New York City in my work there in the 60s and 70s, none of the architects that I worked with knew anything, or at least not as much, certainly, as Carol Lopez has known about the ADA. She's been a godsend to WMATA because of all that she provided to the AD, to our stations and buses and elsewhere within the system in terms of ADA. So thank you again, Carol, and Godspeed.
Thank you, Tina. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. Our next speaker is Paul Samaford. As you all know, he is the Metro Access Subcommittee Chair. So, Paul, please go ahead.
All right. Good evening, everybody. It is with great pride and admiration that we gather here tonight to celebrate an extraordinary individual who has truly transformed accessible transportation in the Washington metropolitan area. On behalf of the Metro Accessibility Advisory Committee and of course WMATA's Department of Access Services, I'm so honored that the Richard W. Hettinger Accessible Transportation Award is being awarded to Carol Paredo Lopez. This prestigious award, named after a leader dedicated to ensuring equity and accessibility, is given to those whose efforts create significant tangible improvements in the lives of people with disabilities. Carol, through her leadership as Metro's Director of Office of ADA Policy and Planning, has set a remarkable standard for innovation, compassion, and excellence in accessible transit. Your tireless work on initiatives like the Platform Improvement Project exemplifies what it means to truly integrate accessibility into public transportation. From slip-resistant tiles and bright LED lighting to improve fare gates and intuitive elevators, you reimagine how Metro serves all riders. These enhancements reflect not just compliance with the American Disabilities Act, but a deep commitment to inclusion and safety for everyone who navigates our transit system. As a licensed architect and a dedicated public servant for over several decades, you've transformed countless challenges into opportunities. You have not only improved infrastructure, but also empowered voices by spearheading Metro's Accessibility Advisory Committee, ensuring that seniors and individuals with disabilities have a seat at the table. Today, as we approach next year, the 35th anniversary of the ADA, your work is a testament to its vision, a society where every individual can access essential services without barriers. Carol, your leadership reminds us all of the importance of equity, innovation, and empathy in public service. Congratulations on this well-deserved honor, and thank you for your unwavering dedication to building a transit system that truly serves us all. Your impact will be felt for generations to come. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Next speaker is Denise Rush, but Ms. Rush is not able to join the meeting today. So we will go to our next speaker, and that is Sandy Neuzel. So, Sandy, please go ahead. Sandy is the second vice chair of the Bus Rail Subcommittee. So, glad that she's here. So, Sandy, please go ahead.
Good evening, and Carol, congratulations. I met Carol just 2 years ago because I haven't been on the Accessibility Advisory Committee as long as some folks who have spoken. But in those 2 years, it was easy to grasp that Carol is a person who's always courteous, always respectful, and always inclusive of all people, regardless of their capabilities and disabilities, and whatever degree those are at. I was on several site visits with Carol, and that's where I would get the sense of who she is as a person and how hard she works for the ADA to be promoted for all people who need accessibility. Carol would ask questions about particular things. Actually, she'd sit back first and let you make observations, and then she would listen to what you had to say, which is, not everybody really listens to what you're saying. And if she didn't understand your point, she would ask questions. And yes, Carol was always taking notes. I was amused by that, but I really felt that that Carol was, building her repertoire of understanding what worked and what didn't work for people who needed accessible help. Anyway, Carol, I just want to say congratulations. And since you're taking notes, I guess the challenge is on for you to help make Amtrak just as accessible as WMATA is. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sandy. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Sandy. And I see Steve, you'd like to make some comments. And yes, please do. And there are so many stories that I could share during the 5, 6 years I worked with Carol. She was my colleague to begin with. Then she became my boss. But we always had such a great working relationship. It was such a pleasure working with her. And obviously, she's well deserved for this award. So, Steve, please go ahead.
Thank you. I'd like to just mention personality, which worked so well with so many of us hard driving persons committee who have different focus. You have a quiet strength that is unique, and it's a very special quality. And it permits you to work with all kinds of people, personality types, having different interests. I know for me, as you know, my focus has been more buses. And I won't forget when we were looking at the prototype down on the mall about 6 months ago, and I asked you, why are we doing this? And why are we doing that? And you did as you always do, which is give a very complete answer and also refer to the ADA support. And based upon this kind of comfort that you have given me and given everybody, it's a great pleasure to hear that you're getting this award. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Philip, I see you have raised your hand, so please unmute yourself and do share your comments.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Good evening, Carol. I've
Hey.
really missed you. Hope you're happy leaving us in the dust as you did. I just wanted to say it was always a pleasure working with you. You were just always, like everyone, had such a pleasant demeanor. And I wish you well. And if you were a true miracle worker, I know this is something beyond your ability, but I thought Phil was going to mention this when he said when he gets on the train in DC. My issue when I get on Amtrak in DC, I have to climb the stairs. And when I get off the train in New York, I'm just walking straight onto the platform. So I know they'd either have to lower the tracks or raise the platform, and that's going to be impossible. But maybe someday along the way this could happen. But otherwise, I just want to wish you well, congratulate you, and just let you know you're dearly loved and sorely missed.
Thank you, Philippa. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Philippa. Yes, it has, just like I said earlier, it was such a pleasure working with Carol. Such an knowledgeable and learned individual. I got to learn so much from her about accessibility. And I'm so happy for her that she's getting this award, and she has retired from Vamata, but she continues to work on things that she's passionate about, and she is just excellent at what she does. So, Carol, thank you for everything you have done. Being a guest of honor, if you'd like to say something, floor is yours.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for those kind words, everyone. Chris Blake always gives me more credit than I deserve, and so did all of you, by the way. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed working while I was at Metro. I learned from each and every one of you. When I take notes, it's like going to school, writing so that I could learn. And as you all know, I am very passionate about making the built environment and transportation accessible. I've dedicated my entire career towards it. So that's yeah. So I appreciate being invited to this meeting again and see all of you and have the opportunity to see that all of you are well. And I think other than working with you as a committee and getting all this feedback and actually developing new standards, providing information to my colleagues in WMATA, I must say that I had to work with the most wonderful team, the Office of ADA Policy and Planning, and also with the Access Services team, with whom we used to work together continuously while I was there, while we were under Mr. Blake, and we continued to work together when we weren't under Mr. Blake. So I appreciate that. And and thank you, Glenn, for the introduction of what the Hettinger Award was as well. And yeah, it was just wonderful to work with all of you. And thank you. Thank you for this honor. And I appreciate it. I have the award. It's a very heavy award. I have it with me. It was mailed, and I displayed it on my Thanksgiving table for my family to see. And my family is listening. They're not saying anything. They're not going to say anything, but they are listening. And I must acknowledge that I appreciate, first of all, them putting up with me giving up every third Monday of the month in the evening so that I can hang out with you and ever supporting me in my career and all and my passion. Thank you.
Thank you. And it's great to see you again, Carol. And well, I see your hand. If you'll just give me a moment and then we can have your comments as well. I just want to share my screen and show the presentation that we have, a brief presentation for Carol, in which there is a picture of the award itself. So let's see, I'm going to share that. And I believe it's visible. If somebody can confirm, I would appreciate that.
I can see.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. So on the first slide, it reads 13th Annual Richard W. Hettinger Award, December 2nd, 2024, presented to Carol Pareda Lopez. And the list of her accomplishments is so large. We obviously could not get that on this presentation, but we have a few bullets. The first one is passionate about the Americans with Disabilities Act, steadfast advocate for all people who have disabilities, involved in hundreds of initiatives at Metro within 6 years, $12.3 billion capital improvement program. Carol went above and beyond the ADA, worked to have WMATA exceed ADA requirements, helped to guide and oversee incorporation of accessibility best practices throughout the Metro system, reviewed construction design, communications, and traffic plans to confirm Metro facilities and services were ADA compliant and accessible to customers. And this is an image of the award. On the award, it reads, the Richard W. Hettinger Award presented to Carol Pareda Lopez 2024 in recognition of extraordinary contributions to the accessibility of all Metro services for all customers. At the bottom of the award, it has an international accessibility symbol. To the right of that symbol is the Metro logo and the Metro written in full. And this is presented by the Accessibility Advisory Committee, hosted by the Office of ADA Policy and Planning System-wide Accessibility. All right, so I would stop sharing. And Phil, I know you would like to make a comment, so please go ahead and take a moment, and we would like to thank Carol.
I wish you I would say congratulations for getting the award. I think it's well deserved that you get it. So, and hopefully you continue on your above and beyond.
Thank you so much, Phil. And Terry and Williams Hall has written a chat message stating congratulations, wishing you all the best, Carol.
Thank you, Terry, and thank you so much.
Well, Carol, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's great to see you, and We are glad that you were able to join and receive the award, although it would have been great to present it to you in person, but we are doing it virtually. So, congratulations.
This was great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. You have a good evening, everyone. Have a wonderful day. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. And congratulations.
Okay. So, Chair Sheehan now moving back to the usual business of the
Does this
evening.
mean, I guess this means we need to go back to work since Carol has given us that example, right?
Yes.
All right.
And I just want to state that now we can go to the roll call of the committee members. Since we did go through the motion of approving the agenda, we can go through the roll call and then we can go through the motion of reviewing and approving the meeting minutes and the board report, if you concur. Chair Sheehan? Okay, you are on mute, but I will go ahead and to go through the roll call. So when I
I'm
call out your
sorry.
name,
Yes,
please
that's fine.
confirm you.
Thank you, Anu.
Great, thank you. Susan Bowmaster?
Here.
Thank you. Darnese Bush? Tino Calabia?
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles? Rico Dancy, has informed that he will be out for a few meetings. Tawan Farmer. Debbie Fisher.
Here.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
Here.
Thank you. Steve Caffin.
Simple.
Steve has joined the meeting. He is connected on the meeting. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newsell.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present, and I'm off for some hors d'oeuvres for the ceremony.
Aren't we all? Sarah Rod.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray.
Present.
Thank you. Denise Rush. I believe Ms. Rush was unable to join today. Paul Summerford.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simonow. And Philip Weintraub.
Here.
Okay.
Kelly's here. Thank
Okay,
you.
great. Thank you, Kelly. All right. So Chair Sheehan, that concludes the roster for today's meeting. Now, if you would like to go through the motion of getting approvals for last month's meeting minutes and the board report.
Very good. Okay, we'll start with the minutes first. Do I have a motion to accept the minutes as written?
So moved, Paul
Very
Simmelfort.
good. No additions or corrections to the minutes. Do I have a second?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you. Are there any objections to the minutes being approved? Hearing none, the minutes are approved as written. Thank you. Next, we'll go to the board report. Do I have any additions or corrections to the board report?
Only additions I would add as amendment, depending on what's coming out of the AAC meeting tonight in terms of recommendations.
Thank you, Paul. Are there any other additions or corrections? Can I have a motion to approve the board
I
report?
move.
Thank you. Second? Do I have a second?
Second, Paul
Very
Simmelfort.
good. Thank you, Paul. Okay, any opposition? Hearing none, the board report will be approved as written or as amended. Thank you. All right.
So, Chair Sheehan, next we have on the agenda the fiscal year 2026 service and fares, and we have a team to discuss that. We have Mark Irvine, he's the Director of Strategy and Policy. We have Karine L. Berardi, she's the Director of Rail Operations Planning and Scheduling, and Alex Block, Manager, Strategy and Policy.
Very good. Oh, we have a couple of new people that weren't on my original agenda. Thank you, Anu, for that. I guess, Mark, I didn't know who's going to start off with this report, but appreciate it. I think I've heard a little bit of it, and I think the news, I think we're in a better spot this year than we were last year at this time. Would you agree?
Yes, that is the headline. And actually really happy to be here talking to you in a better situation, because as you and many others remember, last year it was a pretty tough position for Metro, and it's certainly a lot less fun to be talking about big service reductions than it is possible improvements. But I can go ahead and set this up, and then, like Anu said, we're going to do a joint presentation. But first, I want to say also congratulations to Carol. Carol's a great colleague, but it's actually pretty heartwarming to see this level of appreciation for a former Metro colleague from this group. So thank you for doing that. That's really commendable. As I said, Metro is in a much better situation given the funding increases from DC, Maryland, and Virginia last year. And now we're actually looking at a situation where we're facing continuing growing ridership. And we're really in a position to be looking at how do we deal with that situation and how do we consider service changes and improvements to better meet the needs of customers in the region. And the focus of our presentation today is on the FY 2026 rail service concept, which, if it proposed and approved, would take effect on around July 1st, 2025. And we'll only briefly cover Metrobus service, as the story there is we will be working on implementing the Better Bus Network that was recently approved. And overall, I think you captured the headline, but what we're going to cover is go through the current ridership and service context for rail, and then also talk about the concepts that are under consideration. And overall, the concept is based on optimizing service, so increasing capacity where needed, and adjusting service to meet regional demand and doing so efficiently with existing resources. So it's valuable to hear from people that are closest to the work. It's my pleasure to introduce Kareen El-Beirouti and Alex Block. And Alex is going to go ahead and kick us off, and then turn it over to Kareen, and then we'll all be available for questions and discussion.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Again, my name is Alex Block, Manager of Strategy and Policy with Metro. I am wearing a blue shirt with a green tie, have brown hair with a beard. I also wanted to ask to make sure that everyone can see my screen right now for service and care optimization.
Yes, I can.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So just building off of what Mark said, this is a preview, and these are some slides that were presented to the board last month in November with a quick summary of what's anticipated to be part of the general manager's proposed budget, which will come out later this month in December. For Metrobus, it will include the implementation of the year one of the Better Bus Network. And for fares, there are no changes proposed in the FY26 following the fare increase in FY2025 to account for inflation. So for this presentation, we're going to focus mostly on the potential changes for Metro Rail service to add peak capacity to address some ridership growth and adjust some of our service hours and service patterns. For Metro Access, the anticipated budget would include no change from the FY2025 levels, aside from any of the other normal service changes. Some additional context on rail ridership, and in particular, so we've closed the books for FY2024, and that fiscal year saw rail ridership grow over 27% over FY23, so very, very large growth. We have continued to see that growth continue through our current fiscal year, and we are projecting that growth to continue into FY26 and 27. There is a lot of uncertainty about exactly how much and where we should anticipate that growth in ridership, but we are seeing more riders return during our peak periods to the point where we are starting to see approaching crowded conditions on the rail system at our key locations and choke points. With that in mind, we feel the need that we'll have to address that with additional capacity in the coming years. In terms of our ability to deliver service on the rail fleet, our 7000 series wheel set issue has been resolved, and all of our trains are fully available for service in FY2026. And going forward, beyond this FY26 budget, any future service frequency changes or capacity increases will require a larger rail fleet than we currently have. So given these ridership trends, our service concepts really wanted to focus at adding peak capacity where we can serve more passengers at our busiest times and locations, how we can adjust our rail service patterns so we can optimize the use of our assets and find better ways to meet ridership demand, and that includes adjusting our hours of operation, and also take advantage of more efficient rail operations so that we can invest some of those efficiencies into better service. So to dive a little bit deeper on some of those efficiencies, the main benefit that we have in this coming fiscal year is the return of our automated operations. So that's a combination of automated train operation and automated door operation. This offers a couple of big benefits in terms of service planning. It makes our train service much more reliable. It reduces the variation in manual operation, which allows us to schedule things more precisely. It is more efficient. It allows the trains to operate faster with the same level of service from end to end. And that enables us to run the same level of service with fewer resources. So as an example, in our current budget, the red line, its end-to-end runtime is 70 minutes. And we're anticipating that in our FY26 budget, we can reduce that scheduled runtime to 66 minutes. And those additional 4 minutes of time savings enable us to operate the same level of service with two fewer trains. And that allows us to save money on those operations and also potentially reinvest those resources into other service improvements. We're also looking at, in the future, additional runtime savings with our return to design speeds and some other improvements in our rail automation, which we think, you know, have the potential to enable us to operate even faster in a safe and efficient and reliable manner. So all of this enables us to save money. We anticipate it's about a net budget impact of $7 million that can be used to reinvest in additional service. I should also add, you know, a big benefit of this is we anticipate this will drive ridership growth. You know, being able to offer faster and more reliable service is something we anticipate would encourage more people to ride and use the rail system. At the same time, we are dealing with some of our physical constraints from our infrastructure that limit the ability for how we can combine services together to offer an overall package for rail. So we have the benefit, or the original system design, of using interlined services to try to offer much more frequent service in the central part of our system and less frequent service out on the branches and at the ends of the lines. And throughout time and the addition and expansion of our system, we often have mismatches for how those services combine together in the core and how they divide. And so as a result, we don't always have the exact same level of service on each one of our different branch lines. We do have limited locations in our system where we can adjust service at different merge points and some infrastructure such as our pocket tracks. But currently we are only using the pocket track north of the Mount Vernon Square station in regular revenue service today. And as I mentioned before, the system's original concept was to build all of that frequent service in the core by using interlining. And we see the benefits of that decision in our ridership patterns today. On those shared trunk lines at the center part of the system where our service is most frequent, that is also where we carry the most people on our rail system on a regular basis. So our single busiest segment in terms of the number of people carried is the red line between Grosvenor and Silver Spring, followed by the shared trunk line of the blue, orange, and silver lines between Roslyn and Stadium Armory, and then all of our other shared trunk lines for different services throughout. The branches of each of the rail system, they all carry fewer riders than those shared trunk lines, but that ridership is not always evenly distributed. So to zoom in on some of those branches in particular, there is often a mismatch between the level of service that each of those branches receive and the number of people using the system on those branches. So, for example, we have much higher ridership on both of our Green Line branches, both from Shaw to Greenbelt and from Waterfront to Branch Avenue, each with service every 6 minutes during peak. But on some of the other branches, for example, the Benning Road to Downtown Largo branch for Blue and Silver has trains every 5 minutes, while the new Minnesota Avenue to New Carrollton branch on the Orange Line has very similar ridership, but only trains every 10 minutes. And that's some of the broader context. And then I can turn it over to Corrine to offer some insight into some of the service concepts we were looking to address some of these issues.
Thanks, Alex. So service concepts for all of our trunk lines have been developed to look at different challenges in those portions of the system. And they vary, as Alex described. So on the Red Line, the challenge is really increased rush hour ridership. And as a result of that, projected crowding in both directions of travel. Meanwhile, on the Blue, Orange, and Silver Lines, we're also seeing increased ridership. And as a result, increased crowding. But that is only in the peak direction of travel. So one direction of traffic from Virginia in the morning, and then westwards from DC in the afternoon. But also a different challenge on the green and yellow lines is that we're seeing sustained and growing ridership at all hours of the day. So that goes back to what Alex was showing you in terms of that high branch ridership on the green line. And then also more broadly for the entire system, more ridership requires additional capacity, so we are evaluating the availability of our service on the weekends as well. So next slide, please. Let me dive into a little bit of our Red Line concept here. So what we're proposing is adding some capacity in part of the peak hour in both directions of travel to support that growing ridership. We would integrate all of these additional trains into the schedule, so there would be an even headway when we're providing this additional capacity. And it allows us to do this additional service and alleviate some of the crowding at peak times and peak locations, but in a targeted way, which is lower cost than increasing service for the entire peak rush period, which is 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon. So, for example, on the Red Line, customers could see a train every 4 or 5 minutes during the peak, depending on when they're riding and where they're riding in the system. Next slide, please. So the Blue, Orange, and Silver lines, they also have peak period crowding issues, but as I mentioned, in one direction. So eastbound in the morning in the system, and westbound in the afternoon. So our proposal here for extra super peak service is two extra trains between Wheelie and Stadium Armory, and they'll be added in between already scheduled service to provide some additional relief for those crowded points. And these would take place only in the peak hour and peak direction of travel. Next slide, please. So another Silver Line concept is our split Silver Line. So one of the challenges that Alex talked about earlier on his branch ridership slide was that, you know, we have a similar level of ridership between Minnesota Avenue and New Carrollton, but also between Benning Road and Downtown Largo. However, Benning Road and Downtown Largo riders have twice the service frequency. So this idea is to split the Silver Line between both of those eastern branches equally so that both sides have similar levels of service all day. This is a cost neutral proposal because it reallocates existing service. It helps to better serve communities east of the Anacostia River with better and more balanced service levels. And the customers benefiting from more service between Minnesota Avenue and New Carrollton are more likely to be people of color and low income than the average rider. Meanwhile, it is also true that customers on the Benning Road to Downtown Largo branch who will see a slight reduction in service are also more likely to be people of color and low income. Next slide, please. So on the green and yellow lines, we do have a growing and large customer base on the northern portion of the line. And we're trying to support that with additional service without reducing service on the southern branch of the green line. So our current fiscal year 25 budget has a 6-minute all day weekday headway on the green line. So in order to supplement that, we would add, we would have half of yellow line trains extend through to Greenbelt instead of turning back at Mount Vernon Square to add extra service on that portion of the line. And if you'll also recall a previous slide that Alex showed on branch ridership, it looked at, you know, it compared the branch ridership north of Mount Vernon Square on the Green Line, which is almost as high as the interlined East Falls Church to Courthouse ridership on the shared Orange and Silver lines. So increasing or having half of the Yellow Line trains extend north of Mount Vernon Square would increase the average service frequency to every 4 minutes, which would match the portion of the system for service frequency between East Falls Church and Courthouse. Next slide, please. And system-wide, one additional change is to adjust our rail hours of operation by adding an extra hour of service on weekend mornings, which means opening the rail system at 6 a.m. rather than 7 a.m. Opening that rail system an hour earlier not only benefits existing customers, well, it benefits both new and existing customers. And the reason it benefits existing customers is that Metro service ramps up during the first hour of service. So that means that customers entering the system between 7 and 8 a.m., they'll now get full service in both directions, which they don't right now currently get. Opening an hour earlier increases access to destinations for our customers. So, for example, access to airports to catch a morning flight will be easier with an additional hour of service between 6 and 7 a.m. And the reason, you know, one of the ways we came up with this recommendation is we looked at all regional travel demands on all modes of transportation, and we found that the 6 to 7 a.m. window on the weekend mornings is the busiest travel period in the region when we do not provide Metro Rail service. And it also has higher travel demand than our weekend late night service. If we extended, the alternate concept was also to extend late night service on the weekends by 1 hour. Next slide, please. So together, as Alex mentioned, you know, these service concepts and proposed service improvements are, they're made possible in a budget neutral fashion. That's using savings from rail automation. So being able to operate more efficiently on the rail system and what we're calling train length optimization, which is really smartly assigning where we run longer trains for 8-car trains and where we run some shorter 6-car trains, you know, because of where we need more longer trains because of crowding and capacity versus where we don't need them as much. So this total package includes about 2% more rail service with the same level of resources, which we think that's definitely a win-win for our riders, for our funding agents, for the entire region. Next slide, please. So one of the things that Mark talked about was next steps. So December 12th, the general manager will propose his fiscal year 26 budget, and it will include the final proposed Metro Rail service changes. Beyond that, WMATA's board is currently scheduled to adopt the final budget in March 2025, and the new service that gets approved would formally begin by July 1st, 2025.
And with that, available to take questions.
Absolutely.
And as you'll see on this calendar, we are trying to actually pull forward the time that we start getting feedback. So feedback's welcome now. It's welcome at the board meeting. And we're expecting to have public hearings a bit earlier this year, which is why the board is actually going to be asked to authorize the public hearings in December, whereas last year that happened in January.
Anu, any hands?
I would love to
yes,
speak.
Philip Weintraub has raised his hand, and I believe Paul Sommerford is trying to make some comments. So,
Yes.
Phil, please go ahead.
I was wondering, would this mean like trying to get down crowding? And means would this mean trains longer than 8 cars or more 8 car trains or what?
So I think your question is about how does the proportion of 8 car trains change to what we have today? And what we have today, it remain like what you'll see on the system is about 40% 8 car trains. This budgets for a little bit more, so some additional growth in 8 car trains, but it is a change from prior budgets where we had more 8 car trains in prior budgets. And that allows us, you know, those extra rail cars that we're not using when we have less 8 car trains allows us to provide this extra service.
Okay, I believe that answers Phil's question. Thank you, Kareem. So next is Paul Sommerford, followed by Doris Ray. So Paul, go ahead.
You know, my questions are very simple from a Metro Access perspective as a Metro Access subcommittee chair. So what we heard being proposed for Metro Access is, just for the record, as everyone else is listening and customers, is that you're proposing that for the next fiscal year for Metro Access, there will be no fare changes. The fares will remain the same service area served, and same hours. Is that correct?
That is generally correct, but with the point that the Metro Access service would continue to be based on the fixed service. So if we do open an hour earlier on the weekend, then that would benefit.
Oh yeah, Metro Access.
Metro Access trips, but there's no independent changes to Metro Access. And as you said, the fares are proposed to stay unchanged, given we just had a fare increase.
In the same service hours, times, and service area remains the same as this year. Okay, that is what we want to hear. And like you said, anything extras that we get out of it in terms of, you know, more areas open in terms of service, then Metro Access gets the benefit from that. So, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Next is Doris Ray, followed by Tino Calabia. So, Doris, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
I'm Doris, sorry about the muting. Okay, so I'm curious. You mentioned the hearings are going to be in when? January or February?
Okay, so we don't have an exact time for the hearings yet, but that'll be resolved within a couple weeks. So what we're doing, what we did last year was the board approved authorized the public hearings in January, and then the hearings were held around late February. And so what we expect to happen this year is the board to authorize the public hearings, which means all the notices go out and the hearings are scheduled in December. And then we're looking at actually having the public hearings several weeks earlier. So that could be in as early as late January or maybe early February.
I would like to strongly suggest that you not have the hearings until after the Virginia General Assembly is over with. Which I understand the last day scheduled is the 22nd of February. This is the short session and a very critical session. So I hope that you would do it after that so that people don't have to try to be down in Richmond and try to be here for these very important hearings. I also wanted to mention my understanding is that it's the Better Bus proposal that will be included with the budget, and that seems to result in some big problems for Fairfax County residents whose Metro bus service has been cut, for example, straight up the corridor of Route 50 to our county government center, where we go to budget hearings and such, and also going westward and north, I mean south and west is what I really mean, into the county. And so what I'm concerned about is many people living in the county now are forced into going to the subway and taking the subway out to Vienna, even people that are living on the southeast side of the county, in order to get over to the central part of the county, and then they have to take a connector bus. So it's taking them 2 hours and costing them much more to get there. Thus, I think the lower demand on that end. So I'm wondering whether how you are considering this budget and the cost and the longer time for Fairfax County residents to have to get anywhere because of all the cuts in the Better Bus Network, and how that might make us happy about having to pay for the budget for a system that's giving us less service. How have you considered that I'm looking at not just what's there in that presentation about the rail service, but also the bus service and what's happening with it. So for some parts, like the city of Alexandria,
Doris,
there might be more bus service, but not for us.
Doris,
I'm sorry.
We need to move on. Doris, you exceeded your 2 minutes. That you've asked a bunch of questions. Doris, let them answer your questions, and then we need to move on.
So
you've asked plenty of questions here. Let them answer them.
So, Doris, I think we'll take your suggestion on the dates for the budget hearings back to our board secretary. I think if they were delayed, the reason they're being put in advance is that we need to approve a budget in order to be able to schedule these service changes in time for a late June or early July implementation, but we'll definitely take that back on your behalf. On the Better Bus Network, thank you so much for your comments. The final network was approved last month by WMATA's Board of Directors after a second round of public consultation, I believe, ended this summer. So they're not making any further changes, but we can certainly route your comments to the Better Bus Network planning team and see if there's anything else they can do.
Okay, thank you. Next would be Tina Calabia, followed by Dr. Posner. Tina, please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm glad the team, Alex Block is one member today. I didn't catch the name of the member of the team that spoke. What is her name?
Karine El-Bayrouti.
Oh, okay, Karine. Alex and Karine, the Better Bus Network has been approved, yes. On the other hand, Paul Semaphore, who addressed you a couple of speakers back, and Denise Rush, our vice chair for the AAC, they're both residents of Prince George's County. And I don't know if you are aware, but board member Don Brummer has spoken with us a couple of times, and he is trying to help us figure out what to do about Denise Rush's constant complaint about a certain bus deserts in Prince George's County. So we'll be working on that. And if we are able to verify where the most where services are needed to cover these bus deserts, I hope that the Better Bus Network design and your work will be able to accommodate changes so that Metro bus coverage goes into those areas where there seems to be few or no services for Prince George's County residents. Thank you.
Well, thanks for your comment. And I encourage you to continue to do that, because this year one network, and it is a year one network, which is designed to be resource neutral with what we have now, doesn't represent all the bus service that is contemplated or we at Metro want to run. In fact, in addition to this year one network, there was also a visionary network that was developed that's only constrained by resources. So I don't think we think this network is better overall. And even if there's trade-offs for some people, it is expected to grow ridership. But we don't think it's the perfect network. And so, you know, continuing to engage on it and make proposals and asking for changes is definitely the right thing to do.
Yeah, and just to, and Tino, thanks so much for your comments. I think in terms of timing for the year one networks, you know, the bus scheduling team is writing the schedules right now, and they're going to be finished by January. And so there'll be limited time to make changes for year one network, but certainly more changes for the future.
Good. Thank you, Green.
Hey, thank you. Next is Dr. Posner, followed by Sarah Rod. So Dr. Posner, please go ahead. Dr. Posner, you're on mute. If you would unmute yourself. Okay, I'm not sure if he might be having some technical issues. We can go to Sarah Rod. And if Dr. Posner is able to unmute himself by then we can come back to him. Sarah, please go ahead.
Yes, thanks very much for the presentation. Up front, you mentioned that one of the efficiencies was going to be achieved through moving to automated systems instead of, I guess, using drivers. And I guess my question was, is it anticipated to have any impact on disabled riders being able to embark or disembark from the trains? Is it a faster system? Are they going to have less time to get on and off, or have a safety net to catch them if somebody's having trouble? For instance, I know riders that have their wheelchairs occasionally get stuck or have problems getting on and off the train. Thanks.
Sarah, one of the things about our automation, so we've already executed one part of our automation program, which is auto doors. And in auto doors, you know, the doors will open automatically, but the drivers will continue to close the doors manually after checking and doing all their safety checks after the dwell time expires to make sure that everyone has safely entered the rail car. And that will not change. That part of automation will not change. So we haven't changed dwell times for customers boarding or disembarking on the train. But what does change with the next phase of our automation, which is automatic train control, is that the system is able to more efficiently pilot the train so that it arrives and berths at the station more quickly and more efficiently than when it's driven manually. And it can more quickly take off after the train operator closes the doors. So there's a lot of efficiencies. And then plus, there's in some places, we do also save time between stations in the travel between stations. And that will be especially true when we increase our speeds for trains in some parts of the system. So we'll see that. So there'll always be a driver on the train, except, you know, driving will become more easy for the drivers under automated train operations.
Excellent. Thank you.
And just to add to that really briefly, this is a return to the original design of the rail system that was contemplated when the system was first being built. And we have been operating on manual operation for the last 15 years or so. And this is a way to get back to running the system for how it was originally conceived and designed, and to make the use of the infrastructure as it was originally conceived.
Thanks. I appreciate the clarification.
Thank you. Let's see if Dr. Posner is able to help unmute himself now. Dr. Posner, if you're able to unmute yourself, please go ahead and make your comment. Okay. We can go to Debbie Fisher. Debbie, please go ahead.
Thank you. And thank you for your presentation. I am just curious, how much flexibility in terms of capacity this budget assumes, given that the incoming administration is anticipating bringing federal employees back into the offices, which in theory, if that's successful, could increase ridership significantly. Certainly, we hope so. And that always brings sort of cascading implications for our disabled ridership, because then people take designated seats and spaces away. And so overall, how much has that been anticipated and planned for? Clearly, you couldn't have known that at the time that the budget was first being constructed, but given that we have that information now, I'm curious.
So thanks so much, Debbie. One of the things we looked at was a low and a high ridership growth scenario for fiscal year 26 and fiscal year 27 when we were formulating this proposal. And, you know, obviously on the financial side for revenue purposes, our finance team uses a low scenario, so we don't overestimate the amount of revenue we can book. But for crowding assessments, we use the high scenario. So we have, you know, we had a scenario that we thought was possible, but rather high for ridership growth, just to be safe. And that's what we modeled these increases on for red line and silver line crowding. We, of course, later learned with the change in administration about a proposal of having more federal workers coming back to the office more days of the week. Still don't know, you know, what the timing of, you know, such a policy proposal would be when it comes forward from the new administration. So we'll keep a watch on that. But one thing that we're doing right now is we're, you know, running some scenario analysis of, you know, on top of what we already assumed for this budget proposal in terms of future crowding, what, if any, additional ridership growth from this, you know, more return to work for federal workers might cause us some concern, and where, what segments of the system. So we'll be looking to highlight that and monitor and track that. The good news is that, you know, additional ridership growth would bring in more revenue. And so we are able to operate more service, you know, capturing extra revenue as well in the future.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next is Pat Sheehan. Patrick, go ahead, please.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Thank you very much. Corinne, I don't know. I was one of those federal workers who got dragged back into the office. So I was a grumpy federal worker, but had the ability to retire. So I guess you'll have to figure out in your scenario how many will come back and how many will decide they don't want to come back in the office and retire. So we'll just have to wait and see on that. Mark, I think this question might be for you. I would think that with the increased ridership projections that you're seeing, that you would probably end up from a budget standpoint with better numbers so that you won't maybe need to take as much out of the capital budget to assist with operational expenses as was maybe anticipated. Would that be correct based on the fact that I'm hearing better ridership numbers in this up for 2026 than was projected originally?
Yes. Thanks for Thanks for the question. And for everyone's benefit, one of the practices Metro's had for a number of years is using a portion of capital expenses to pay for eligible operating expenses. And those eligible operating expenses are generally preventive maintenance on things like repair of rail cars and buses. But one of the things we did a couple of years ago and when we were facing a more severe budget crisis is we really increased that number. So from a traditional policy number years ago from $60 million of capital budget transfer to cover preventive maintenance and operating budget to up to $190 million. And so we've been trying to lower that number. And to your question, the answer is yes, the better revenue is definitely just very good for the budget overall. And compared to what we were projecting several months ago, we're now expecting to be able to propose a budget that reduces the amount of capital preventive maintenance transfer that we were anticipating earlier this year. It's not all the way down to the level that we would ideally like, which is 60 million or even lower, but it's much less than it was a year or two ago.
We don't want to go back to the, you know, bad old days where we were borrowing too much and the system was in a state of disrepair. So I know that's a concern of everybody and the board. Right. Good. That's good news. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Susan, I see your hand is up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I just have a quick question if maybe someone could answer. How much, what percentage of the funding is from Farebox revenues and what percentage is from the contributions from the political entities, and if there is any other source of funding, what percentage that would be? Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, without the exact numbers in front of me right now, I can say that at a very high level, for the overall Metro operating budget, fares cover less than 20% approximately of the overall budget. But that's something that we can provide to you in more detail, and we publish in our budget book. And if you look by mode, it's different by mode. It tends to be higher on rail, a bit lower on bus, and lower on Metro Access service.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Susan. Chair Sheehan, with that, we do not have any additional hands up at this point.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, all of you, for this presentation. I think it shows a well-balanced budget this year. I like the increases. It's good. I think the trends in four or five or six areas look really good, a lot better than what we were seeing last year, and hopefully they will continue. So thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you for having us.
Hey, well,
good.
Thank you for your presentation this afternoon, Alex, Mark, and Kareem. And we will look forward to hearing from you in the future when there's any update. So thank you. Chair Sheehan, at this point, we can go to public comments.
Very good. And I think we're right on time, Manu.
Sure. Excellent. Yes. And before we begin that, I just want to remind any members of the public, if you'd like to make comments, apologies, please either raise your virtual hands, and you can do so if you're on phone, you can press *9. If you are on the video conference, you can click on the raise hand icon, and that will do the trick of raising your hands. We do want to make sure that every member of the public who intends to speak gets an opportunity to do so. So initially, we would have 2 minutes per speaker. And if there is any time remaining, we can surely come back to you. You can either send me a chat message to be placed on the list, or you can simply raise your virtual hands. So with that, we do want to see if we have any members of the public with their questions or comments. And at this point, Chair Sheehan, seems like we have no members of the public with their questions or comments.
All right. Well.
Okay.
Very good.
I see Janice Samuel just raised her hand. Janice,
very good, Janice.
Please go ahead and make your comment.
Thank you, Anu.
I don't know if this would have any bearing on our efforts to improve service in Prince George's County. And many of you may know this already, that County Executive Angela Alsop Brooks rendered her resignation as of 10 a.m. this morning. So I think that should be taken into consideration if that would have an effect on our efforts. Sorry, just got off the treadmill, so I'm not dying of a heart attack. The other thing I wanted to bring up was I wanted to know if there would be any effect if the District of Columbia comes under federal rule, as the new administration has stated they want to do. Would that have any effect on operations of WMATA, bus, rail, and metro access?
I'm glad to see that that's out of the scope of what I know. I think that...
I'm sorry, can she repeat her question?
I don't, yeah. Go ahead, Janice. I hadn't heard that rumor, actually, so that one's taken me
that
aback.
The new administration intends to put the District of Columbia under federal rule. Is that what you're saying you haven't heard?
You haven't heard that one.
Yeah.
But even with that, let's just say, I was looking for the question back related to public transit.
Mm-hmm. The effect.
And that's my question. Would it have any effect on public transit?
Oh.
Since, you know, the District of Columbia, they, you know, input money just like the other jurisdictions in Northern Virginia and Maryland. So that's my question. So are these things being taken into consideration, the what ifs?
Yeah, that's above my pay grade, if you will.
Yeah, I think that we're going to have to wait and see on that. I mean, I know that the budget that they have right now is a 2-year budget. So mm-hmm. what they're proposing for 26 is, I think, pretty solid. Mm-hmm. And so what's going to happen in 6 months, I think, is anyone's guess.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just putting it out there to see if we're being proactive instead of
reactive, sure they are.
To taking yeah. things into consideration. And then, you know, back to the county executive, I don't know if her vacating her seat, and of course we'll be having a special election, if that would have any effect on our efforts to improve service within the county.
I will say that, Janice, we're focused on that. And Sandy, I don't know if you want to speak to kind of what you've done, but we are going to be keeping focus on that for the month of January, and we do want to move forward. Sandy, do you want to jump in?
Sure. If there's time, I can try to explain to Janice and to others. So about 8 of us are on what's loosely called a Prince George's County bus task force, and we put together a letter with our concerns and questions that went to Don Drummer. And I was going to ask Anu tomorrow, after we got through this meeting and things settled down a little bit for Anu, to be sure to send that letter on to either Victor Weisberg, or if Don Drummer has identified another contact person in Prince George's County, to send our concerns to them and ask and invite them to come to the bus rail subcommittee in January. So in that correspondence tomorrow, I'll include everybody who's on that bus task force, but that's the general gist of things. Don Drummer's been quite the advocate for us. He's thanked us profusely for getting the conversation going between WMATA Board, Prince George's County, and the AAC. So I think we're in a good position to move forward, but it's not going to happen like overnight. We're still working on it. Okay.
And we are still going to be pushing for the update to the Transit Vision Plan for 2025, which will be interesting to compare that against what we saw in 2018 to 2024. And we'll see where we are. But I think we've gotten their attention.
Thank you.
And Janice, I also appreciate, I know you had some inputs into that letter. And thank you very much for your inputs. It made it a stronger letter, and we appreciate your support. I know that you're very interested in Prince George's County, and I like the focus of the bus rail subcommittee. Tino, Steve, Sandy, Denise, Paul, everyone, you know, you and Amber, who are all part of this whole struggle. We think we can do better. And I've also pushed it, and we're pushing it, not just me, but others in the DMV Moves group, which is, you know, part of about Better Bus Network is all part of that. So we're trying to push a concerted effort through, so that our efforts can, you know, get a better bus system for Prince George's County. We know that it's been needing an upgrade for quite a long time.
Thank you.
Good.
Okay. Chair Simon for Chair Sheehan, we have Tino Calabia and Doris Ray with their hands up. So Tino, go ahead.
Yeah, just a comment on the what happens to the District of Columbia under the new administration. Who knows? And who fears? But bear in mind, apart from D.C., a major goal in the design and construction and operations of the WMATA subway metro rail system has been to enable suburban people to come more easily and more quickly into D.C. So that's been the overriding, one of the overriding goals, and that won't change. The fact that the federal government is probably going to coerce more feds to come into the office, that'll also help boost ridership and operations. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Tino. Doris, go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, so I just wanted to mention, since we've been mentioning the year coming up, that this will be a Virginia gubernatorial election year. And so the topic of funding of Metro, I think, might be a point to bring up as the election year unfolds. It will also be a year when the members of the House of Delegates will, at the state level, will be up for re-election again. And so, but more importantly, what I wanted to tell you is that before he leaves office, Governor Youngkin will be developing his last budget, which will go into effect for 2 years starting in July of 26. So this might be a time for us perhaps working with disability community in Northern Virginia and the rest of the state to start lobbying with the gubernatorial administration to make sure that they and the General Assembly don't get into a problem of fighting over money for, you know, Metro as Metro is going forth with its new budgets and such. Just wanted to bring that up. And also, with regard to the district, my colleagues from there might educate me better, but I believe that the limited home rule that the district has was adopted, was given, granted them through federal legislation. So if I'm remembering that correctly, it might be something that we want to look to for members of Congress who are interested in transit to make sure that they will not let anything happen to the regional bus and rail system.
All right, good. Thank you, Doris. Yeah, that's going to be an open question, and we certainly will be getting educated on that over the next few months, and we'll see where it goes, and how much influence, you know.
So, I mean, I think you're going to have to set up, if they were to take away home rule, I think they have to come up with a solution, because before the current city council governance and the ward system, we had a board of commissioners, like when I was growing up in D.C. And so, they're going to have to come up with how are they going to rule it.
Right. I don't think it'll certainly be a local. Away. Yeah, it'll certainly be a lot of local efforts.
Was just saying the government's going to take over.
Right. No, I think, and that's where I've heard a lot of it. And we'll just see how it pans out. The fights will be at the state and local levels, as a lot of times they always have been. Good. Thank you, Doris. Anu, anybody else?
Yes.
Okay, Tina, go ahead.
Tina, and then let's jump to our committee reports, okay?
Sure.
Okay. One last thing about Virginia. The current governor has not been a friend of WMATA. Someone whom we should make sure is aware of what we are concerned about is the female head of the Senate. She's the one who really stopped him in his tracks on many things, but inclusive of his takeover of the Capitol arena into Alexandria. I don't know what relationships we have had in the past with the woman head of the Senate, but we should, let her know about our concerns more often than in the past.
Thank you, Tina. Okay. Glad to see we're not putting any pressure on our two new members from Virginia and Sandy. No pressure, guys. Don't worry about it. I agree with you on that, Tino. It'll be an interesting run, you know. Anu, can we jump to our subcommittee reports?
Sure. So we can take the bus rail subcommittee report, followed by
you're
the
up
next
again, Tino. Process. Good.
We of course heard from Don Brummer, the board member, who has done great service for us in taking up our concerns regarding the bus deserts in Prince George's County. And he spoke to us. We also had speakers talk about the Braille machines. Not only Sarah Meyer, but those who made the site visits on the Braille machines. We heard from the Better Bus Network redesign people on the status of that project. And we had scheduled a topic to be discussed by the folks involved in the winter shutdown, but because of the timing of our discussions, I guess we're delaying that to this coming meeting, Anu, right? Winter shutdown.
Yes, they will be coming next week to speak and share information about the winter shutdown.
Okay, so that's what we dealt with last time.
And Tino, I will say you had a jam-packed report last time. I know we put Prince George's County on your shoulders, which is probably not a bad place for it to be. But I want to also congratulate you and the task force group, Sandy and others, that are honchoing that, because I think it's a worthwhile effort. And obviously, Don Drummer agrees with us.
Yes, yes.
So it's a good effort, and we'll take whatever wins we can get there, you know. But I think we've got a good group of six or eight of us that want to make a difference, and that's great. So very good meeting last time. Very good. Paul, I think you're up.
All right.
We gave you more than 3 minutes, Paul. What do you think?
Oh, five is always good, but, you know, I try to keep it straight and to the point. So Metro Access Subcommittee meeting last month and was very productive. Mr. Blake shared us some insightful information about a major service issue, which everyone is experiencing right now, late pickups, even as I've seen today. And hopefully soon enough, we will have relief, as Mr. Blake announced that instead of the current three Metro Access bases that are open under one provider, that another base, at least hopefully two, but at least one was to be open as of December 1st in Montgomery County to help coordinate and alleviate a lot of the late pickups, so drivers are there in the timely within the pickup window of Metro Access customers. And hopefully there'll be another possible base, a fifth base opened near, as he stated, near Northeast DC, or hopefully in the DC area, in the District of Columbia, to kind of service the customers in that region. So we're going to see how that rolls out, and hopefully that will alleviate a lot of us to be picked up in our window. He did say that, you know, he is using all resources as, you know, operationally feasible, such as abilities ride is, you know, as many trips as they possibly can take, because the providers, a taxi cab and Uber, you know, their resources can accommodate the number of trips as needed on an operational basis, on a daily basis. They will use that resource to make sure that, you know, we are back to, you know, the goal is to pick up time performance of reaching to, you know, our minimum standard of 92% and better. We're not there yet, but we hopefully will be working in that direction with that being done. Other things we discussed was about Uber. You know, they're talking about automating, you know, when there's late pickups, where, you know, we have staff that kind of operate it. And right now they're, you know, like anything else, they have done some great things. And then there's some, you know, issues with that. And those will be hopefully worked up as an option for automation will be coming in with Tim, which we eagerly, hopefully, will hear more about in the December meeting as we hear updates. And I'm just looking over the notes here. The other thing we, Mr. Blake did also add that, you know, in order to provide the Metro Access service, there will be possibly, you know, more shared rides. We also hopefully will hear more from Mr. Blake updates about the next generation vehicles next month as we come close to the year. And we also going to hopefully get a revisit on where Tim is at. And with that, I usually would allow Denise or anything else. Mr. Blake, did I miss anything in my report?
No, that was a very concise and detailed report. Thank you.
Okay.
Not having Denise here to correct you, Paul, you know, you had to go back to your second.
Yes.
Good. And all Mr. right.
Blake will correct me if I misspoke anything out of turn.
That's it. All right. Very good. Anu?
Sir.
What's next on the agenda?
So I just want to make my announcement for members of the public who intend to share their feedback with us before or after the meetings. They are more than welcome to send emails to us at metroaacchair@wmata.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100 and we will follow up.
Very good. And our next agenda item?
That is all we had for the next agenda item.
Oh, so we can ask for a motion to adjourn.
Tino raised his hand. Tino.
Oh, Tino. Tino,
this better be brief. I'm trying to give him back 15 minutes.
I had intended to send out and did try to send out four pictures of the Metro Access kind of vehicles used in New York. Something to consider down the line is that at least one of their models can accommodate four wheelchairs. It's an amazing system they must have up there. But in any event, whenever we're looking at new vehicles, I hope that Christian will take a look at the pictures I'll be sending. This time I hope I get all four of them out and think about possibly purchasing the kind of vehicle they have, which accommodates four wheelchairs.
So let me say this to you before Mr. Blake comments, because I already can see what Mr. Blake is going to say. So in New York City, for one who rides, for them to have those larger vehicles, that would mean, depending on state laws, the drivers would have to become CDL certified drivers, depending on the size. In because I know in New York, they all have to be CDL certified for that size of a vehicle to drive. Am I correct, Mr. Blake, in some of that logic?
That's part of it, but I'll be honest with you. The main thing, there's a couple of things. Christina, you did send some pictures before, and I think I responded to them. Here's a couple of things. One, just like on Metrobus, we're moving away from lifts. So those vehicles have lifts on them where we want to move to accessible low-floor ramps. Because part of the thing with the lift vehicles, and you hear this from our customers all the time, is the suspension. And if you're sitting usually in the back of the vehicle, but anywhere in the vehicle, customers have constantly complained about an uncomfortable ride. So that's why we have been steadily moving to a low floor, soft suspension fleet of vehicles and moving away from the lifts. We have lifts right now that can hold two wheelchairs, and we're going to keep some of them for a while. But that's one thing. But here's the other big piece. When you talk about four wheelchairs in a vehicle, that's great. Don't get me wrong. Your colleagues on the, or at least some of your colleagues on the AAC, and I can assure you that thousands of Metro Access customers absolutely, I'm trying to be nice about it, absolutely do not like sharing rides with one another. So it's already been a challenge trying to get them to understand the fixed ride equivalent, shared ride aspect. So that's why we have been moving in a direction of fewer shared rides where possible. This year, we had to try to be a little more efficient because of the geographic limitations that I talked about at the last meeting. But now we're trying to go back, but in doing so and trying to be a little more efficient, we're witnessing the on-time performance challenges that we're facing that Mr. Semaphore was talking about. But I can tell you, Mr. Tino, if I tried to come on here and encourage the idea that we would have 3 to 4 passengers on every trip, they would run me out of town very quickly. So I hear you on the large vehicle, and that's why the next generation we're getting is a low floor ramp that holds two wheelchairs. But yeah, anything bigger than that, and the idea that we're really going to be doing a lot of shared rides and moving around, oh yeah, they would be very, very upset. So we've been moving to smaller, more comfortable vehicles as opposed to the larger super multi-passenger vehicles.
And you have to consider, if you have four wheelchairs on a vehicle, Tino, for some of us who are ambulatory, has to maneuver around that. And that is a challenge. Now, with this next generation van, that's a game changer. But like I said, when you include that, you have to think about the comfort and safety of your other passengers aboard too that has to maneuver around that.
And then just finally, yeah, you know, you're talking about the maneuvering. You know, Ms. Rush would call it the Cupid Shuffle when she would have to do the shake to get past the wheelchair. So we're trying to, and I think we've done a good job of eliminating that with the next generation. No, please share, Tino, and keep sharing, and let's keep talking. I just want you to understand the philosophy behind the evolution of our current fleet. We brought in the sedans to try to bring some comfort during a period of time where we could. Those will eventually go away when we'll be mainly a a next generation and minivan fleet. And that goes to the idea that we want to be very efficient, but we want to be efficient through the use of the third parties and only share rides when we absolutely need to.
But okay. I agree with you on one thing, Tino.
Yeah.
The idea is coming. Absolutely.
Okay.
Anything that we see, let's consider it, and we'll see how it fits in. Excellent. Paul, did you say something about adjourn?
Yes, I second that adjournment already.
Very good.
Before you go for adjournment, I thought I had seen Sandy's hand up.
Sandy.
She's lowered it. So, Sandy, do you still have your comments or you? No?
I just wanted to back up what Christian Blake said, not so much in terms of, you know, I don't want to sit with three other people in a van, more in terms of the efficiency to get from point A to point B to point C to point D. The fourth person in the van might have to ride quite a ways, and it just, for the riders, it seems more inefficient. But anyway, I think it was well covered, the pros and cons of larger vans.
Right. Good. All right. Excellent. We have a motion on the floor to adjourn.
So moved.
All those in favor? Yes. Anyone opposed? I don't think so. All right. Everyone have a good holiday season. And what am I doing? That's right. We have two more meetings this month.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. What am I thinking? I almost canceled two meetings.
Blockbuster Anthony Human Access Subcommittee meeting.
Well, there you go. We'll be there next week. Okay. Okay. I stand corrected. Thank you, Paul. Tino.
We have the bus rail next week at 4 p.m. So please be there.
Yeah. I did not cancel this next meeting. No. Good night, everybody.
Okay. Good night. All right. Good meeting. Thank you.